Let's go get it, baby. Let's go do it. Come on.
Sports doesn't stop at 9, and neither do we.
Let's get the show going, man.
This is 92.9 The Game tonight on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
All right, Dom. 3,000 teenagers, including me, inside the gym at DeKalb Central College off Memorial Drive. 1978. Oh, yeah. Mother's Finest. Baby Gene Kennedy, Moses Moe. Oh, just rocking it out. Yeah. God, that was 46 years ago. Oh, my God. I graduated from Lithonia High, Lithonia, Georgia. Yeah, oh, my God. And I gone to DeKalb Central. And then it became Georgia Perimeter or something. Pardon me for not knowing this. And I think it's like Georgia State, Clarkston. I don't know what they call it anymore. Sorry for all of you. We used to call it UCLA. Upper Clarkston, Lower Avondale.
Uh-huh.
Where do you go? UCLA. University of California, Los Angeles. No, Upper Clarkston, Lower Avondale. So anyway, yeah, that was, you know, so that was, that's how the funk, even though it's not really super funky, I mean, more rocky funk, but more, you know, but big bass backbeats. Okay. Just a little education. Because somebody asked me, and the only reason I asked Dom to play this, and I'll get to your calls, Tim, Brandon, and Warren, just a sec. Somebody asked me, hey, listen, did you consider any other songs besides, you know, Down with the Sickness by Disturbed as your, you know, your bumper song? And I actually came down to three. And this is the one I chose. The other two were Master of Puppets by Metallica, which is not my favorite Metallica song. I mean, I like it. I mean, Metallica fans would like to shop Master in concerts, but it's got a great open. It was like that or Enter Sandman. And the other one was Thunderstruck by AC/DC, which is, I almost went with Thunderstruck because it is such a great open.
Yeah.
And it's a great song.
Absolutely.
You know, it's just a, you know, that's, you know, but yeah. So I didn't think I could go wrong, but I just, the drum beat on Down with the Sickness, you know, just feel that. And then the whole wah, wah, wah. Anyway, let's go to Brandon in Norcross. Sorry about that. I got derailed there for a second there, just in my feels. It's back being a teenager again.
Hey, what's going on, Rob?
It goes too fast, boys. What up, Brandon?
Hey, what's going on, Rob? Hey, what's going on? So check this out. First off, I want to say, fellow Bulldog alumni graduation, I throw you myself.
Hey,
speaking about
go Dogs, go.
Here, that's right. We have a great team. Right. Yeah, we could be better. We could have a little bit more personnel. But what you do have to realize is Jimmy Lake, I think this is his first year as a DC in the NFL. Is that correct?
I'd have to go back and look at his resume. He was head coach at Washington. Then he was it's possible. Yes, it's I don't have his resume in front of me. So, but I'll
so
go. I mean, he's not a young guy. He's in his 50s. I mean, he's not a young coach. So
no,
I don't. I'd have to go back. But okay. Anyway, let's go with yes.
But the speed of the NFL compared to college is vastly different. Would you agree? The talent level is vastly different. So,
well, yeah, but he was with the Rams staff. Hang on, he was with the Rams. He was with the Rams staff. It wasn't like he came from UW to here.
Right. Okay. I'll even go for that. To say that he could scheme as good as Nielsen or even Pease, right, who probably have 100 years combined, years in the NFL, is, you know, you're asking a lot of them. We're still early in the season. I think by about the third quarter of the season, he'll have the defense where it needs to be. Because you got to remember.
Well, but Brandon, let me ask you a question. I hate to interrupt you, but I want to ask you a question. And I got other people who want to get in here. If you're Grady Jarrett, you're Grady Jarrett. If you're David Onyemata, if you're those kind of guys, for that matter, if you're Jesse Bates and Justin Simmons, if you've got that kind of, you know, you've got that kind of sway, especially those two, though, when we're talking about the defensive line, are you not sitting down with your coaches saying, including Jimmy, and saying, hey, look, guys, can we talk about this, about how we can do this a little bit better? Are you not interjecting saying, look, I know this is what you guys want to run, but what if we did? Are you not trying to, because at your work, at my work, if something isn't working, are you not sitting down with your coworkers, your boss saying, hey, listen, let's try this, right?
This is true. But ultimately, no matter what I say as an employee, the final decision is going to come down to the guy above me. He might take what I'm saying into consideration, but ultimately he has the final call. I say all that to say, we have a good situation. While we're not getting home, we are getting pressures. And the bottom line is the biggest stat that matters is the wins and losses. And right now, we're ahead. We're in a better position than we've been in years.
No question.
And it's looking really bright. So what I would like to say is I don't think we need to try and go out and get anybody that's going to cost us anything in the future, right? Because we do not know what may happen, may or may not happen. If we can get something for cheap, somebody's at home, that's cool. But I think we need to build what we have. I think Y has the same effect on the team's morale as Campbell has with Lions. And so with that being said, this is the first year. Let's give it a little bit more time to gel. As long as we keep stacking up wins, you know, we can get somebody to rush and get home sooner or later. But the wins is what matters. And let's focus on trying to get the wins. Now, when we get to the playoffs, it might be a little bit more interesting. It's going to get a little tougher. But I do know that we only have two losses, and one of those losses came against the Chiefs, against a quarterback, which is probably one of the best improv guys in the last 20, 30 years. Would you agree?
In a game we should have won.
We should have won. That's the point. We got all the way down to a faulty call that we didn't get. Had we gotten that call, we might not even be talking about this right now. We might be 5-1. So what I'm saying as a Falcons fan, as an Atlanta fan, let's focus on the win. Let's build up the guys that we have. Let's not keep pointing out the deficiencies. Let's build them up.
No, it's not a deficiency. Okay, I guess I appreciate it, Brandon. I got other callers to get to. I'm not trying to point out a deficiency. I'm pointing out a concern here because it is obvious that they've been pushed off the ball a little bit, or a lot, actually, on some of the run plays, and their tackling has been less than stellar in the interior. And so I'm just trying to clean that point up. The whole point of this conversation tonight is to clean up an area of concern. Okay, because if you can clean up the area of concern, this is a team that can go a long way. And right now, that area of concern happens to be, you know, the 3 to 4 guys, however they stack it on that defensive line, that are just not really. Is it a scheme thing? I mean, you've got quality players. Why do Lorenzo Carter, Caden Ellis, Zach Harrison, and Arnold Abbekady have 0 sacks in 6 games? And because somebody's got to get through here. You got to create 3rd and longs, flip fields. That's how you're going to win games in the playoffs. You're going to have to be able to play positional football, and they're not doing that right now. They're winning because Kirk Cousins is willing them to win. It's not unlike what we had a lot with Matt Ryan. Remember that? I mean, it looks kind of similar, doesn't it, in a lot of ways. Warren's at Peachtree City. Hey, Warren.
Hey, how you doing? I appreciate you taking my call. I'm like you. I'm all in. Let's go get somebody, like, right now. But it's crazy because it seems like now with defenses, no one is playing with their hair on fire. It's just not happening. And we need someone who's going to come in there and really get to the quarterback. That's first and foremost. And that will inspire the other guys around him to play as well. Because right now, everyone's playing real scared. They're playing apprehensive. I don't know if it's because they think they're going to get a targeting call or whatever. You know what I mean? But there's not that hair-on-fire type defensive play that we need that will take not only one player but the entire defensive unit to the next level.
And if we can get just better play out of that unit and, you know, create some more havoc and, you know, hey, listen, again, the whole point of this, do you not agree, is that do we not all see the same thing here? That this team has a chance to go a long way?
Yes, I agree. I agree with you. But again, I think with the way the guys are playing, it's like no one wants to risk it all. You know, everyone's trying to play for maybe the next year or whatever. No one's going in. Like back in the day when Lawrence Taylor, they came in there, you knew someone was coming at you and they were going to try to knock your head off.
That's Lawrence Taylor. You know, certain players you can't replicate. They came out of a different mold. Appreciate it. Let's get to Tim in Atlanta and get him in before the break. Oh, buddy, Tim.
John,
Tim,
hey,
how are you doing?
John. I'm doing great. Hey, quick. How many tackles do you feel like a defensive? I mean, how many sacks do you feel like a defensive tackle would be a good year for them? How many sacks would that be?
Well, I don't know, maybe 10 for a defensive tackle.
10. Okay. Grady Jarrett has been in the league for 9, going on 10 years, according to what I looked up. He has 35 and a half sacks. Say it's 9 years, that's what, 4 sacks a year. All right? It just seems to me that Grady Jarrett is off limits from all criticism from everybody. But whenever I watch a game, I'm like, what the heck has Grady Jarrett done? Nada.
Well, up until the last game, hey, listen, Tim, because I'm going to run up against it. I'm not going to disagree with you. That's why I started wondering a little bit just in conversations with Joe, saying, is Grady 100%? Because he wasn't the Grady that we have seen of old. Now, he is getting toward the back end of his career, too, on top of that. You know, this is a guy that if they don't – Tim, if they don't blow 28-3, I hate to bring it up, if they don't blow 28-3, he's the MVP of the game.
Well, okay.
He blew game up.
Did he? All right. I'm just looking at the stats going the most.
He would have been the MVP of the Super Bowl. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm with you. Thanks, Tim. Do appreciate it. 404-726-0929. No, I think it's legitimate. I don't think anybody's off limits here. But I will say that I thought Grady played a better game against Carolina than I've seen him play this year. He was more active. He was in the backfield. He had a couple of DFLs. You started seeing 97 pop. It was like he wasn't there for a while. It was like, where's Grady? You know, I mean, but he is getting a little bit longer in the tooth here. I mean, so I'm sure he's got 2, 3, 4 more years, you know, in him, but we've got to get that production out of him. But he also, guys, remember, he's getting doubled all the time. They're looking, going, take that guy out, double him. Because our guys on the edge can't beat one-on-one coverage. If you had people out there beating one-on-one coverage and Grady was getting, all of a sudden you go, oh, there's Grady Jarrett. Well, yeah. Okay, that makes a big difference. We did talk with Joe Patrick, our Falcons insider and reporter, a bit earlier in the show. We're going to bring that back to you. He had some really good insight on the team, and we're going to replay that as we continue next, because you want to hear it if you're a Falcons fan, on Sports Radio 92.9, the game tonight.
Go out! Go out!
This is 92.9, the game tonight.
Yes, top-rated in late-night radio.
Talking all things Atlanta sports with you.
On Sports Radio 92.9, the game.
92.9, the game tonight. From the Northern Kia Studios, John Fricke with you. Joe Patrick is my co-host on the Wade Ford Tailgate Show. He is our Falcons insider, our Falcons reporter. And, of course, this week, the Atlanta Falcons back at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Our Wade Ford show will be at 9 a.m. Don't miss it, Joe. I want you to be there, like, more than a minute early. I get the heebie-jeebies. Is Joe going to make it?
No guarantees.
No guarantees. Here comes Joe running up. I'm here. Good.
Well, I learned after that week. I think that was before I came up for the Saints or Bucks. But I did a call in with Dukes and Bell before that. But I needed my phone to get in the parking deck. So it was a real situation there. We'll do that again.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. So yeah, that's an excuse. Don't let them do that to you. Okay. Just don't let those guys do that to you. Okay. All right. I just say it. We love them, but you know, no. All right. So Joe, here are the numbers here as we get ready for the Seahawks coming into town this week. The Falcons sweep the South, 4-2 overall, first place in the NFC South, second seed currently in the NFC, 4-0 in conference, 3-0 in the division, back-to-back-to-back. I mentioned at the beginning of the show, this really couldn't have played out much better. If you could go 4-2 at the beginning of the year, these are the four games you would want to win. The conference and the three division games, this is tiebreaker city USA, and people who say it's too early to start thinking about big things with the Falcons are missing the whole, hey, we own the best tiebreaker situation early in the year in the entire NFL.
Yeah, totally. I mean, this is pretty much the best case scenario for the Falcons team. It's also probably at the top end of the distribution of outcomes that could have happened for this team as well. Just especially when you consider how some of the games went and the fact that the Falcons won a couple games where, you know, they were what, 96% or something to lose at those point in the games. But also on the other hand, you know, they were a legitimate missed call away from potentially knocking off last year's Super Bowl champions at home in the Kansas City Chiefs. And, you know, that Steelers game obviously is one. I think it's just kind of a throwaway because of the state that Falcons offense was in for that game. And you would think that if those teams were to play again, that there would be a more decisive scoreline going the other way. At least that's how I feel. But, yeah, John, it really feels like there's true momentum for this team. Like, certainly I have not seen since I've been covering them starting in 2022. It's obviously the first time they've won three games in a row since the end of the 2019 season. And, you know, these guys, I just thought it was important to see what we saw on Sunday, which was them, you know, focused in on an opponent that, you know, let's face it, I think all the fans expected the Falcons to win. The players certainly would have expected to win that game, but they didn't overlook it. We've seen them play down to their level of competition in the past, and they certainly did not do that on Sunday. So it makes you feel like they can go in again and beat the Seahawks at home and just win all these games where you feel like they have not just a fighting chance, but are favored, and they are this week against the Seahawks.
You know, of course, we could break down the games and nitpick, which is what we do. Knee-jerk reactions are us. That's our job here. And so if you look at the – just stepping back, that's why I started with the big picture. Because in the big picture right now, it couldn't have gone a whole much better. I mean, yes, maybe 5-1. I get that. But if you had to pick four games to win, you would have picked these four games. Remember, right. Again, keeping in mind that five of your six division games are before week 11, so you could salt if you can go on the road in the next five games, win down in the swamp, and win at Tampa, even if you could split those two games, you might salt the division tiebreaker away before you get to Carolina at the end of the year, and who knows what shape they're going to be in at the end of the year. They're already a wreck right now. So you took advantage of that. So the good and the bad here. So my confidence check on the Falcons, which I'm going to talk to, you know, continue to talk to the fans about, that's the confidence check, okay? You did the right things. The consternation here, Joe, I'm going to talk in a couple of minutes about some trades in the NFL and get your thoughts about this. This defensive line, I'm just going to give you stats or what you make of them, but you just take this stat. Sacks this year, Matthew Judon, 1.5. Grady Jarrett, 1.5. David Onyemata, 1. D. Alford, 1. Now, D. Alford's 1 is one more sack than the combined totals of Lorenzo Carter, Caden Ellis, Zach Harrison, and Arnold Ebiketie, who have combined for 0 sacks. 5 sacks. 5 in 6 games.
Yeah, it's a problem. I mean, the pass rush is a problem, and we've talked a lot about it. I know on our show and other shows, in that, you know, part of the problem is that they're not putting themselves in a ton of great positions to rush the passer, but also they're also just not rushing the passer. Like, if you look at this team statistically, they are not just, like, lowest in sacks overall total, just, you know, the accumulation of having 5 through 6 games. But on a per-play basis, the pressure rate is also the lowest in the league. So not only – the defense has been pretty ugly, let's be perfectly honest, like, because they are giving up some chunk yardage on the ground that is not putting them in good position. But then, yeah, they're also not getting to the quarterback. And I don't know. John, I've been thinking about this a lot and, you know, about, you know, the idea of potentially going out and getting one of these pass rushers who seem to be on the market with a trade. It's tough because this team is already missing some draft capital, especially going into next year, having already traded away your third round pick for Matthew Judon, who's come in and, you know, been okay, but the best pass rusher you had so far, but clearly, like, not a real, like, alpha pass rusher as far as, like, one of the best in the league, I would say. And you're missing your fifth round pick from the tampering allegations or the tampering sanctions. So you're already missing picks. Are you willing to give up more? I mean, that is tough because this team, the way that they've, you know, built out with some of these big contracts, like, they are going to need draft picks, not only to select to fill out the roster, but they're probably going to need some of them, especially in the future, to pan out and be core players for this team. So I'm always hesitant to say, yeah, they need to go out and get that guy. But at the same time, I can't argue with the fact that it hasn't been good enough and they clearly need to do something. I was talking to Grady Jarrett in the locker room after the Panthers game, and, you know, he was saying the right things. He was saying what you want to hear from, you know, your leader up front, which is that, you know, they haven't been good enough in that respect, but, you know, they got to keep pushing. They got to keep trying to get better. But how much can you really just get better by the course, you know, just by trying to, you know, work through it? It feels like, you know, it's in baseball also, it's like you can't just go out there and say you're going to pitch better. Sometimes you actually need to go out there and get a pitcher who's actually good and has proven it. So, yeah, I don't know. And I will say, you know, it's tough to see Lorenzo Carter in particular. I think he's the lowest graded pass or edge defender in Pro Football Focus's database. I think of like 153 qualifying edge rushers. He's at the very, very bottom. And that's just not the level that he's played at in his career so far. And I don't know exactly what's going on with him. And I do think you mentioned Caden Ellis and he doesn't have a sack yet. I do wonder if that could potentially be a solution or, you know, something in the tool belt for Jimmy Lake and Raheem Morris to put him out on the edge. But in order to do that, you need Nate Landman and Troy Anderson healthy, or you have confidence in J.D. Bertrand so that you don't have to play Caden Ellis in that off-ball linebacker spot up the middle. But regardless, that's going to be the big talking point and question mark going through the trade deadline is how does this team improve that aspect of the football team? Because it's clear it is a clear area that is holding this team back if they have true championship aspirations.
Well, and then there's, you know, the big questions about the drafting. Zach Harrison looked like at the end of the year last year that he might have – I had high hopes for him coming into this year at the way he played in the final, say, month of the season last year. Arnold Ebiketie, I'm not going to say I've given up, but I've given up. All right, how about that? And and then there's, you know, the fact that you have guys – see, the problem with Onyemata and Grady, the way I've seen it, because I started focusing on it a little bit, they seem to like – they like to kind of basically use three guys or even four if they use, you know, a fullback. They're going to take those two guys out of the game, banking on the fact that Carter and Harrison and Ebiketie and the like, Malone, can't get off the a one-on-one situation and make a play, which has been the case. So that makes me wonder, to your point about Caden Ellis, if Jimmy Lake doesn't need to scheme something up. One of the things that the Falcons have not done a ton of this year is blitz. And so maybe they need to be a little bit more aggressive on defense.
Yeah, potentially. But the other thing, John, about this defense, and I kind of mentioned it, but, you know, and we've talked about it plenty, but in terms of the run defending, they're getting moved off of the ball, especially on the interior. And, you know, Grady Jarrett
and their tackling has not been good.
Yeah, it has not been good. But Grady has never been the biggest, you know, interior defensive lineman. And obviously coming off that ACL injury, you wonder if that's affecting his ability to kind of anchor himself down in the middle of that interior and make himself harder to move. When I was looking at the Pro Football Focus grades from this past game against the Panthers, guess who their three highest rated players were? It was their center and their two guards, the interior of their offensive line. That was, again, like I said, moving the Falcons interior. And to me, that, like, if you were to have told me this before the season that the interior defensive line was going to be a problem, you would say, well, yeah, well, you got Eddie Goldman coming back. He was playing at a near, like, you know, at a above average level. He was a good interior defensive lineman, nose tackle, before he left. But, you know, he hasn't played in a couple of years, and he just does not look like the same player that we saw when he was in Chicago. And so I've also wondered, when it comes to potentially adding players to this team, do you also have to think about adding, you know, an interior defensive lineman, you know, somebody that's heavier, somebody who could play that nose and just kind of create, you know, a rooted position there that can allow the linebackers to run and make some plays? Because when I've seen this team, you know, from up in the press box, you can see it pretty clearly where, like, offensive lines are getting to the second level and blocking up these linebackers, and you're having to see Justin Simmons and Jesse Bates come down and make a bunch of tackles. Fortunately, they're both solid tacklers, but you're always, you know, that if your safeties are making a bunch of tackles, that means you're giving up some yardage. And so it's just not the same defensive line that we saw last year with guys like, you know, well, frankly, I mean, Grady, it was Grady pre-injury, David Onyemata, but then you had Calais Campbell and Zach Harrison often playing along with those guys because Ryan Nielsen liked those real big power edges. And I think that position allowed Zach Harrison to rush the passer a little bit more in certain situations too. I think that's why he doesn't have a sack yet. And I'm not, like, too worried about that aspect of it. Frankly, I think he needs to get some more snaps. I think Ruka Roro should be getting some more snaps because he's looked really good against the interior. I'd just like to see them, you know, try some different things, whether it be personnel or, to your point, John, whether it be with some scheme things, if you want to blitz a little bit more, just do something different, throw your off-speed stuff at some of these teams. But I think clearly there is a blueprint for how to play against the Falcons defense. And so far, they haven't done a whole lot to be able to stop these teams, even when you would think that they kind of know what's coming.
All right, so we've got about a minute left, Joe Patrick. Davante Adams goes to the Jets. Amari Cooper goes to the Bills. Jets trying to salvage something. The Bills obviously making a play to help Josh Allen. Those are just the beginning. There are going to be a lot of teams stripping out already. We can see that. there are going to be players available. You know, I understand about draft picks, but if you really think you have a chance at the Super Bowl, I don't think you should be passing up on stuff right now. I think you should try and make a play. And if you're Terry Fontenot, you've got to be – you've been bold. I mean, why not take the next bold step?
Yeah, I mean, that's ultimately going to be the question that they face. And not only the draft picks, like I was mentioning earlier, but it also means if you're going to bring a player in who's going to cost any significant amount of money, it means you're going to need to do another restructure with somebody on the team. So you're going to need to try to identify some player that's currently on the roster that you are willing to tie down to a long-term deal or that you plan to be around for a long time so that you can push that money out. So there are a lot of decisions that this front office is going to have to make, but you know, I think the shining light is that they've been quite good in their pro personnel scouting and identifying players that they want to bring in to make this team better on both sides of the ball. So I think that a lot of Falcons fans right now should have a lot of faith in not just Terry Fontenot, who gets a lot of credit for being the GM, but Kyle Smith, Ryan Pace. These kinds of guys have a lot of experience, and I think have a lot of faith built up so far from the Falcons fans.
Joe Patrick is our Falcons insider and reporter, and of course he is the co-host of the Wade Ford Tailgate Show live 9 a.m. on Sunday morning right off Northside Drive as we get ready for the Falcons and the Seahawks at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Big college news, a lot of big college news, and big college weekend ahead. There's a local team that's playing tonight, right now, live on a Tuesday night. We'll tell you what's going on there and look forward to that huge Georgia, Texas, and Georgia Tech Notre Dame weekend we have ahead on Sports Radio 99 The Game.
Let's go get it, baby. Let's go do it. Come on.
Sports doesn't stop at night, and neither do we.
Let's get the show going, man.
This is 92.9 The Game tonight on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Off, my thanks to all of you that called in. It has been my pleasure to talk to you again. Wish you could do this a little more often. John Fricke with you from the Northern Kia Studios. You may or may not know, there's college football all week long nowadays because some of the other schools want a chance to be on television and get a chance. So they play Tuesday, they play Wednesday, they play Thursday, they play Friday, they play Saturday. There's football every night of the week now when it comes to the college and the NFL here. There are games tonight. There are three Division I games going on right now. South Alabama is leading Troy, if you care, 19-3. Louisiana Tech and New Mexico State are scoreless in the first quarter in Las Cruces, again, if you care. But there's a local team playing. Right now, halftime in Murfreesboro, Middle Tennessee 7, Kennesaw State 2, Dom, 2. So they're on the board, the Owls. They're down 7-2 at halftime. That sounds like, a sixth inning score in baseball.
Yeah. We'll see if they can hold out, though.
But, hey, listen. Yeah. But Kennesaw State has yet to win this year. They're 0-5. So, and again, I tried to talk. I said, look, it's a lot like when Kennesaw State first, Vince Dooley went there and kind of kick-started the program and lent his expertise. It took him a couple of 3 years to get up to speed. They had to recruit the right kind of players to kind of be, and then they got really good. And in 1AA, and now stepping up, they're going to have to it'll take a couple of years for them to get up to speed into being a bigger program and having that kind of success. They will. They'll do it. It'll just take a little time. So KSU, looking for its first win, is down 7-2 at halftime to Middle Tennessee. Hopefully they can get a win. Thursday night coming up this week, Georgia State will be on the road. They'll be at Marshall. Now, having said all that, this big game down in Statesboro with James Madison at Georgia Southern. But the big games this week, every weekend from this point forward is going to be littered with massive games. And the reason is because of the 12-team playoff. Who's in, who's out, who's right, every week is going to have huge matchups that are going to have playoff implications for the winners and losers. Certainly this week it does for Georgia and Texas. And as we go along, Georgia could lose the game and still make the playoffs. All right, they could. But if they lose the game, they're going to have to win out. At that point, they have to win out. They can't be 9-3 is not going to cut it. If they lose to Texas and they lose to Tennessee, bye-bye. They won't make it. Because, Dom, right now, if I ask you a question, what position do you think, what place in, think about the SEC, right? 16 teams in the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
What place is Georgia in the standings in the conference?
As of right now?
Yes, as of right now.
Ooh, I'm not sure off the top of my head.
They're fourth.
Fourth? Okay.
Do you know where Alabama is?
I would figure they're right above them.
No, they're right below them. They're tied for fifth.
Tied for fifth, okay.
They're tied for fifth. They're tied for fifth with Arkansas, Vanderbilt, and Tennessee. And you know who's leading the SEC? Anybody out there want to know? Now, it's a case they played one more game than the other two teams. LSU's in third. They're 2-0. Texas is in second. They're 2-0, so I guess they're tied for second. Texas A&M is in first place. Okay. Texas A&M is in first place. So there you go. I mean, this is what they're 3-0. It's sort of like the Falcons. Hey, listen, they're just the lead dog right now. And 10-2, if you're in the SEC or the Big Ten, if you're 10-2 and you get into the title game, you're going to make the playoffs at 10-3. The loser of the title game will make the playoffs at 10-3, only in the SEC or Big Ten. Okay? So if you're Georgia and you're 10-2, when I say win out, you got to win out and then you got to get into the title game. Which, by the way, 10-2, that's why I said at the beginning of the year, I said to a Dogs fan who called in, I said, look, you know, guys, you have to understand, you have to wrap your brains around, this is a new world of college football with the expansions and the portals and everything, that 10-2 is a really good year, because what you want to do, is you got to start viewing it like the NFL. The idea that you're going to go 16-0 and win the national title probably is not going to happen. It may happen once. But that'll be a rare thing that happens on a rare team that just has everything going. Now, Ohio State could go 16-0. Really? Okay, maybe they can. We'll see. I think they've got some landmines ahead of them. Oh, they're going to destroy Michigan. They're going to win the Big Ten going away. Okay, so let's say they do. Let's say that the number one seed or the number two seed in the playoff. They may have to play Georgia. Remember, they're going to have to play three games. They may have to play Georgia. They may have to play, you know, a rematch against Penn State. They may have to play Texas. I mean, 16-0 is not going to be easy by any stretch. Michigan, Big Ten title game, three playoff games. Good luck running that table. Being perfect? Okay, if you say so. So it's just not that easy. Now, Dom, do you know how many unbeaten teams are left to come? Well, I'm just asking. I'm just telling you. There are 11, right? Okay, so 11, halfway through the season, 11 unbeaten teams. You know that what Georgia and Alabama aren't? They're not on that list.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay? You know who's on the list here? Here's who's on the 11 teams that are left unbeaten. Halfway through the season, we're down to just 11. Tell me if this surprises you. I'll go team by team and tell me if you're surprised. Okay? Texas. Yes
nope.
or no?
No.
Oregon. Yes or no?
No.
Penn State. Yes or no?
Yeah, a little bit.
Nah, you could say no. I'd buy no. I mean, they're a really good team.
Yeah, yeah.
Miami. 6-0.
I'm not surprised.
Pittsburgh, 6-0.
Yes.
Iowa State, 6-0.
Yes.
BYU, 6-0.
Yeah, yeah.
Indiana 6-0.
They're 6-0 too, huh? That's a little surprising for me.
Army 6-0.
Yeah, Army. I was like Army.
Navy 5-0.
I was like Army and Navy are both undefeated, which is interesting.
Navy 5-0.
Yeah.
And Liberty 5-0. Those are your 11 teams.
Not noticing a lot of I was gonna say it's an interesting group. A lot of the bigger names, a lot of the blue blood, so to speak, have already taken losses early in the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the race to the playoff is going to be really interesting. Now Friday night, I mentioned that, you know, tonight Kennesaw is playing and Thursday night Georgia State plays. Friday night there are two of the 11 unbeaten teams play on Friday night. Oregon plays. They play Purdue. It's called a conference game, but it's really a scrimmage. No, I'm just Purdue's terrible. God, Oregon's going to beat them. They're in West Lafayette. They call it Lafayette up there. Oregon's going to win that game 61-3. Oklahoma State, though, is at BYU. That could be an interesting game in Provo. Oklahoma State's a pretty good team. Saturday, you've got Miami at Louisville, Virginia at Clemson, Nebraska at Indiana, Auburn at Missouri, of course, Alabama, Tennessee, third week in October in Knoxville, Georgia Tech, Notre Dame, Michigan, Illinois. Now, here's the interesting thing about the Michigan-Illinois game. Dom, Michigan and Illinois are both ranked, but Illinois is ranked higher. Who had that? Did you have that? Hey, when Michigan plays in Champaign third week in October, they're both going to be ranked, but Illinois will be ranked higher.
Yeah, I would have never have guessed that. But seeing the way the season has played out, I'm not surprised by it now. But if you would have told me at the beginning of the season, yeah, absolutely not.
LSU is at Arkansas. Interesting game.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then, of course, 7:30, everybody in America is going to be watching Georgia, Texas. And so I said at the beginning of the year, it's possible Georgia and Texas or Georgia and Alabama could play three times, and it is. And, you know, because they could meet in the regular season, and then they could meet in the, SEC title game, and, of course, they could meet in the playoffs. And I said the problem for Georgia was that, and then this is the Alabama game, is that if they were to play Alabama or Texas three times, none of those games would be in Athens. Because they're playing in Tuscaloosa in the regular season. They're playing in Austin in the regular season. The SEC title game would be in Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and who knows where the playoff game would be. It could be back in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Now, Mercedes-Benz Stadium is kind of a home field for Georgia, but none of them would be in Athens. So you're going to have to beat Texas or Alabama three times, none of which are between the hedges. That's just difficult. That's all. It's just, well, it's already proven to be hard. You know? I mean, because they lost the game to Alabama. Granted, it was weird. And then, of course, Alabama turns around and loses to Vanderbilt. Of course, Vanderbilt lost to Georgia State, so you tell me. I have no clue. Then Alabama damn near lost to South Carolina. Oh, God. I got nothing. So I don't know that there's an upset anymore. After Northern Illinois beat Notre Dame, I don't think you could throw an upset at me. They'll go, oh, wow. No, I think just like, oh, okay, that's this year. These people were putting out, you know, Heather Dinich on ESPN, here's who's going to be in the playoffs at the middle of the year. I'm like, nah, you want to talk about way too early? We got no clue who's going to be in the playoffs. None. It's so strange that Army and Navy are in a conference, Dom. They're in the American Athletic Conference. Are you ready for this little weird stat? And it's only weird now because there's only going to be one group of five team. I guess it's kind of group of six if you include the two-team Pac-12. But only one group of five team that would make it into the playoffs because they've got a guaranteed spot, right? What if Army and Navy meet and they're unbeaten? Both of them, still, right? And so the Army-Navy game would, no, the Army-Navy game won't count at all, except it might. Follow me on this. In order to go in, the American wanted Army and Navy in their league, right, Dom? So they invite both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Army and Navy say, we will come to your league, but, so they put a disclaimer in it. They said, we're going to play the Army-Navy game itself outside of the league as a non-conference game because we want to play after the title games are over in our own time slot, in our own way for that typical Army-Navy game. So it's theoretically possible that Army and Navy could meet for the American Athletic Conference Championship game on December the 6th, okay, which would be a home game for the higher-rated team, either at West Point or at Annapolis, and both be unbeaten. Army beats Navy and is unbeaten, and, oh, they're going to the playoff. They would have to be selected prior to the Army-Navy game on the 14th. And what happens if Navy beats Army? Would that change who they would put in for the group of five? Oh, wait, no. We have a second. No, we're going to put James Madison in now. No. They could get squirrely weird. It could get really weird because, yeah, Army-Navy, they're in the same conference. They're playing a conference game. No, it's not a conference game. What? I know. So that's something to keep your eye on if those two teams keep staying unbeaten. I'm telling you, Dom, is this the weirdest year or what?
It's been super strange. Like, again, I remember the night that Bama lost to Vanderbilt and being here because we were in here for a United match, and I remember talking to Conti, and Mike was just like, I can't believe we live in a world where Vanderbilt beat Bama. And mind you, that's Vanderbilt just after losing to Georgia State. Light it blue. Shout out to my alma mater.
Well, or Northern Illinois beats Notre Dame.
Exactly.
It's not like Northern Illinois is any good. And by the way, in the projections that Heather Dinich at ESPN at the moment, Alabama is not in the playoff. That's how tight things are, guys. Well,
that would be
something. They're tied for fifth in the SEC. A&M and Texas and LSU and Georgia and, heck, Vanderbilt are all ahead of them. You know, so, yeah, Vandy's ahead of them because of the tiebreaker. I know. Weird, huh? Just strange. But, boy, what's going to be shaken out after this week? Look, anybody goes 11-1. That's why I'm telling you, Georgia fans, if you go 11-1, you're going to your conference title game probably as the favorite to win the conference title game. And, boy, you got to make your conference title game because the winner of the conference title game gets a bye. You want that bye. So just go out and win out. Should be a fun week. I'll talk to you Saturday morning with Chris Goforth on College Football Game Time leading up to that big day. Talk to you Sunday morning, 9 a.m. for Wade Ford leading up to the Falcons and Seahawks. My thanks to Joe Patrick. My thanks to you, Dom. And my thanks to all of you who called in. Been a fun night. Hope to do it again soon on Sports Radio 92 on the Game tonight.